Seems like Mara's running a little late. So I guess, oh, well, there she is. I'll let her start things then. Hi, Mara.
Hello, what did I miss?
I was just about to ask for a note taker, but nothing
Ah.
else.
Well, you read my mind. Any volunteers today to take notes?
I can take notes, Mara.
Ah, thank you, Lola.
Sure.
I do appreciate it. So Lola gets the gold star today.
Yay.
Yay. Yes. I apologize for sending out an agenda late. I was surprised that September suddenly ended. So that's just me. Probably because I was at WolfCon in person and everything. Who else here made it to WolfCon? Let's talk about yay, yes, Tara went and Brooks was there.
I
The
attended. Oh, go ahead.
you did the virtual?
Virtual, yeah.
Okay, who else was virtual?
Yeah, I was virtual for a few meetings, not as many as I wanted.
Of course. Well,
Yes,
sometimes it's, yeah.
me too. I was at nine sessions. Yeah.
Wow. It's so much fun when there's so much going on and you want to you want to attend a whole bunch of of sessions and they're all like at the same time or something like that. I'm missing somebody. Valerie Brooks. Oh, Tara. Sorry, I'm taking attendance today. What caught your eye for those of you who went to WolfCon? Either in person or virtually. What was the sort of thing that really got your attention and made you really curious?
Well, for me, I'll go first, and this does hook into user management. I'm working with a library right now implementing Folio, and the topic of fees and fines have been a big one, especially the transfer criteria. So to hear Thomas Trutt talk about all the current limitations with what exists and how Cornell has worked around the transfer report and everything else, was very useful to broaden my mind on this topic.
Excellent. Did anything else sort of leap out for anybody?
I really enjoyed this session on using Airflow to automate processes in Folio. It was presented by some folks at Stanford. And it looks like it would be a really powerful tool for us.
Yeah, no kidding. That definitely looked like a lot of fun. I was at a different I was at a different session at the time, but boy, did I want to go. So I'm waiting for that to come up for the video, but yeah.
Very interesting for me was the session from the Library of Congress where they showed their add-ons with browser extensions, and it was great. And I think we can have a look at their solutions.
Yeah, that had a lot of excitement. There was a lot of excitement on that one because I wound up like meeting up with two of the people who went. I didn't get to go to that one, but when I went, when I like speaking with people who went, they could not stop talking about it. So it was just like, can we get this? How can we get this? How can we get this to work for us? So that definitely sounded like, that was some very interesting work, money well spent, I think, for the Library of Congress. And it's there. Yeah, go ahead.
The cataloging themes aren't interesting for us as we have our central cataloging database, but all the rest might be very useful.
And I think, I hope that the Library of Congress is, it's a government entity, so provided they're open sometime soon, we'd be they'd be it would be sort of part of their mandate to share it, to sort of share the browser extensions. So
Yeah, if you watch the if you, when you get a chance to watch the recording, Caitlin specifically talks about them wanting to make these tools available. It's just that right now they're shifting from their implementation phase to their kind of post live phase, and they won't be able to get anything like that out until they've a little farther into their post go live phase. So they just their final like app go live was in August. They switched over from Voyager for their authority records to Folio for their authority records. That was kind of the last of their implementation phase. So they're really just getting into it.
They're just getting started, their first few steps.
I actually had reached out. I'd like when I'm passing a couple of times. I had reached out to them because they had mentioned implementers as a possible venue for sort of sharing some of this stuff. But of course, nothing's going to happen in the next however many days this takes. So this being the shutdown of DC.
Yes, again. But I guess we're just gonna have to take it as normal for a while, I guess. Actually, it has been every few years. I blame certain very specific very certain specific politicians from 1994 who had our very first shutdown because they didn't get a good seat on Air Force One when they had to travel somewhere. And it's just gotten pettier and pettier ever since. But yes, I actually really enjoyed Lehigh University did a thing on reporting where they talked about the different options of getting data into reports from Folio. In-app reports, the reporting app, the Lists app, and MetaDB, and sort of like there was almost a rubric of sort of like how complex your report could be versus how much of a learning curve there was. And I thought I thought that was really interesting. And it, for me, in my mind, it dovetailed nicely with Brooks's pre-conference session on using Python to access the Folio APIs. I'm not sure if that one was recorded, but it was very helpful.
It was not. None of the pre-conference workshops were recorded,
Ah,
as far as I'm
dang.
aware.
Yeah.
I do have some plans to do some kind of one-off like screencast recordings or meetings to talk about some of the stuff that I covered in that, but it's going to be a
Right.
little while yet before I do that, so.
Okay. Yeah. Also, I sort of mentioned at the time restarting the Eureka Permissions Lab. Just starting the just starting having open space where someone can block out in their calendar and sort of we can work on Eureka questions that people have come up with and experiment. And see, and sort of understand in a more hands-on way how the Eureka permissions work. I mean, it's not going to be that much different, but anytime there's a fundamental change in, I mean, the structure is going to be different. It's flatter, we all know that it's going to be very fundamentally different. But in terms of the front end use, the end user, instead of having permission sets and roles, they're just going to have capabilities and roles. And it just makes it really flat and it's a lot more secure. And and it prevents what has apparently happened in the past, which is not just infinitely nested permission sets, but creating two permission sets that are members of each other. So the so I'm looking at restarting the Eureka Lab on the second and fourth Wednesdays. And if it's just me, then that's what'll happen. if I'm just sitting there quietly, then it'll give me an hour every week to really flex my muscles regarding getting Eureka permissions set up and to really kind of get a sense of where we might have where there might be trouble at least for Chicago. Just I'm putting that out there. If any of you want to show up, then you are welcome to. It's not going to be the sort of thing where yes, I see this in the chat, Lola. This I think that's one of the reasons why I want to have the lab. I mean, I'm not gonna claim any position of authority, but the idea is that we can kind of work out together what the change to what the move to Eureka will be. And it's what in like Sunflower? I mean, we may as well get cracking. So yeah, if you want to join, you're perfectly welcome to. I would love it if it's not just me, but it's not an absolute requirement. We can either just take that time and work quietly on our own things, or we can share one common issue and we can all sort of work through it together and see what happens. So, oh wow, Amelia, yes. You're going to Sunflower. Does that really mean you're going to Eureka?
Yeah, so this is just our test environment for now. And we're hoping to hold off on Sunflower until after the new year, but Yeah, we want to make sure we have plenty of time to test and make sure all our permissions are still working how they should be.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, so yes, that's I'll be putting an announcement in the Slack chat, the Slack channel. Should I announce it more widely? Implementers maybe, or cross app, or I'm thinking in implementers, but
Yeah, I think implement just is a good start.
okay. And then maybe we can just have a document on the wiki, that will just sort of like lay out the changes that we've seen, or how we can, yes, absolutely, we can amplify the message. Just sort of the things that we've learned when it comes to, shifting from Okapi permissions to Eureka permissions, and sort of, making a list essentially of the things that we learn in each lab. If we come across something that's important, we can write it down, and then we don't have to try to remember it to each other. So yes, does anybody have anything else to say about WolfCon? And is there anything about user management? I just sort of like, I was up there, I presented a couple of things, but I have no idea if it's, I have no idea how much these things sort of mattered to us as members of the SIG. It's sort of like introduction to the user's app, and that sort of business. An overview of what Eureka permissions is going to be like. Which basically was just sort of like, I was a I worked with like the I acted like the hype man for the developers who were showing their migration tools. So I could see that. Yeah, so the yes, I see the we do have a nice big old wiki page on roles management with Eureka. Maybe we can kind of work through what role creation will look like, what capabilities look like, just so we can at least have a starting point on that first day. And we can certainly add things to it. I don't know who's the author on that page. I thought initially it was Thomas. Oh, but now it's Craig. Okay. Craig is one of the developers. Yeah, I know. Yes, indeed. Yes. ICANN has capabilities. I love that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we'll I'll start trying to I'll be looking for a good structure for the next. Yes, okay, good. And we can work on doing a thing and then writing it up, so that we know what's so that we can have some kind of record of what we're learning as we go. So is there a I think that, I mean, is there anything else anybody wants to say about WolfCon?
You mentioned a developer presentation on the Rolls migration script.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was recorded, but
Oh.
did have they does their script preserve the permission set names now? Because I know before or early on, it was just applying new UIDs as names. Has that been changed?
I'm not sure.
I don't think it has, Amelia. I think those sets come through with the long UUID as their name, and one of the tasks for libraries will be to rename those with something meaningful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yes.
I think the newer version of the script is supposed that that's was one of the whole reasons that was being built was to fix that issue, because that was like the big, really big complaint. So that session should have been recorded. So whenever the recordings get posted, it'll be there. I wasn't able to attend that one either.
I was there, and it was a really, I found it, I thought it was a really helpful session. So, I'll be looking for the recording, and if I see it, I'll
Or
put a link to it.
actually, it's like a multi-step process, Amelia. Like it gives you a spreadsheet of things that you can kind of manipulate and then run against the system to actually apply the changes when you when you're upgraded. So it's I think some of it does depend on user intervention, but it's not as tedious as it would be to do it with Folio. Like it gives you the old names next to the things that's going to create.
Okay.
Because it's not a good one-to-one. You know, you'll get Craig talking about this. He'll be like, it's not a good one-to-one relationship.
Right.
So I think the goal of that spreadsheet is to kind of let you prune things you don't need in the more flattened state. If you if you want to, and kind of rearrange things a little bit that they make more sense. And it's easier to do that in the spreadsheet than it is manually in the UI, definitely.
Yeah, it'd be a
Yes.
lot of clicking in the UI.
Oh,
Yeah.
God. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Just thinking about it, yeah, that, I mean, it sounds like such a great candidate for a programmatic option, a programmatic workflow. Maybe Airflow can help us. Or not, but not okay. All right. Thank you all for discussing WolfCon. Amelia, do you have anything else you might want to bring up or?
Yeah, so last meeting we talked about a bunch of issues on the gap list. And one of them was the ability to protect fields from being overwritten by user import. So I spent some time looking at this feature, and it really seems like it's five separate features. So, or it could and probably should be broken into five separate features. Here, I can share my screen.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the main feature, and it's defined by these five other tickets. So let's see, where's the primary one? Okay, so this is the main event. This is being able to set a field or an entire record to protect it from being updated by mod user import. I highlighted this in the description because I am not really sure what it means by ignoring folio rules logic. It seems like that would lead to users not expiring when their dates say they should, which I don't think is a good idea. But yeah, so that's one thing to note. But yeah, so this is the core feature. You would be able to set on an individual user record, either select fields to protect or to protect the entire record. And there's not a lot of detail here on how it would be implemented. What I would envision with this would be some kind of lock icon that you click and it marks the field as protected. Oh, does this one not have full record protection?
Nope, sorry, this is me talking about the previous post and by putting the chat. So don't worry
Oh, whoops.
about it.
Oh, okay.
I have a version of this, a version of the field level protection stuff implemented in that in my Python script that does user import stuff without using user import.
I'd be curious to know how that works. Is it something you define outside of Folio to
It
protect?
I a long time ago, if you go back to one of the like 2020, maybe 2021 meetings for this group, I proposed a UI only work solution for doing protected fields in user records. For the as far as the users app went, like it didn't have didn't, like it you'd have it would still need to modify mod user import, but it would give you a better UI for managing what I'm about to say. Basically, you could add a field, just add a hidden field to the user record that accepts an array, or it could be an array, it could be whatever, but it just needs to accept JSON paths. So, and then you would you can if it's not a hidden field, you would just manually enter them. You'd have to know the JSON structure of the records, user records, to do it, manually in the UI if you were doing it that way. But if you didn't, basically, if that field is present, the UI could throw up, protect checkboxes next to every field in the UI. In the edit screen. But then basically the importer just sees that protected field, reads that list of JSON paths to protect, and then preserves them when it updates that record. There's a version of this implemented in that tool, and it works for both record level. So you can, like, when you add in each record, someone could, enter that string of JSON paths in the user record. And it uses custom fields right now to do this. But there's also the option to protect fields globally for each import job as well in that script to say, don't, for this job, don't overwrite these fields for any record. And it can combine those two capabilities as well. So you can have field, like you can have record level protections for fields, and you can have global job level protections for fields. It doesn't have like particular user protect, like that's what I was saying. It doesn't have, yeah, and I definitely would like to walk through that script in a future meeting. It's what Galileo is using to do their user management. To me, it's kind of a re-implementation of mod user imports. in a sane way, I feel like. The only thing it doesn't do right now is department and custom field option management, choice management stuff. So you can't add departments or add choices to a custom field that way. But my mod user import still works for that. So you could use mod user import just for that and then use this for the rest of it. So I was that I got that suggestion got heavily poo-pooed at the time when I suggested it. And I can understand it's kind of hacky, but I felt like it kind of POC'd the concept of how to manage it. Because I mean, you could create a dedicated field in the user record that was just field level protections for the records. And even you
And
could even
then
have
you're
like a locked user record field, where you say this record can't be modified by, import. But I hadn't had that's not I haven't not done that, but you could have the custom field too, for that matter. But if there's a on the Folio FSC project on GitHub, where the Python client, where the Folio client lives and where our migration tools live, there's this Folio data import Python module, and it has some like cataloging stuff for doing mark import records, but it also has this user import functionality. And if you go to that project on GitHub, there's a the README goes through kind of the basics of using it. So it, if you're interested, I definitely recommend taking a look at that.
Yeah, and it sounds like if we did implement this in the UI using a method that you're describing where we create a dedicated field, then it would probably be very easy to update your tool to also just use that field instead of custom field.
Totally. That it because it requires that the my implementation requires like a you have to give your custom field a very specific name for it to work. And basically it detects the presence of that field, and then if it's populated, it respects the what's there. But yeah, so yeah, definitely. Yeah, it could easily be adapted to use a dedicated field. Or fields. I mean, if you wanted to do record level protection, that'd be a pretty simple thing to implement too. And like I said, the biggest difference is the way that it expects a file of just JSON objects, basically, in one per line. It began life as a alternative to Folio's, user import module for doing user migration during our migration process, because we were being hamstrung a little bit by the external system ID being the only way to match, because we had a certain client that kept wanting to change their external system IDs. So that was fun. So yeah, so that it provides alternative matching capabilities. You can match on different unique fields. But it yeah, like so you basically you can throw as many records as you want at it at a time, and it'll just run until it's complete. Unlike, like with user import, you got to do batches, small batches. It's similar kind of, but it, like I said, doesn't accept a single file, so it doesn't read everything into memory. So if you're doing a really large collection, you can iterate over a file to load it instead of loading everything into memory and then pushing up objects.
Maura, you have your hand up.
Yeah, it was essentially just to bring up why I think this thing was sort of written up in the first place. If you go back to the original Jira, was it UIU 530?
Yeah.
Okay, and it had to do with providing a way. All right, thank you, Brooks, for coming by. I was, when it comes to protecting a field from being overwritten, what had brought this up was that in our previous ILS, we had to be able to override a A user records suddenly being marked inactive because of things that happened with that particular user, say on campus. One person, one of our staff members who is doing a lot of sort of acquisitions work could not log into the old system because thanks to a previous shutdown, their loan check didn't come through. And so since their loan check was delayed, their sort of status as an active, member of the university community, a student, everything related to their being a student was suspended, which included their ability to do their work in the library. Which was at that point the only way this person could start earning enough money to start, putting in sort of a little bit of earnest money toward, getting their registrations unsuspended and that sort of thing. So this person was actually sort of just very suddenly, and thanks to reasons beyond their control, they were just cut off. And so we needed a way, and our user loader guy had created an app that allowed us to mark a person as active for a certain number of days, which would give it would give sort of the human resources departments a chance to sort of catch up. So it's, and we're actually running into this kind of trouble now, because we have a lot of new hires, and there are any number of gaps where they don't show up as being eligible to work to do any work in Folio. And that could be a new librarian, it could be a new student clerk, and we're trying to address the root problem. But it requires like a good faith effort from other IT departments to try to track down what the problem is. And that sometimes gets a little difficult. We have a lot of gaps, and we don't have a lot of we don't have a lot of communication or expertise regarding why these things are happening, or under what the circumstances are. In some cases, and this is the weird part, like there was a raft of student clerks that were hired because we just like on Monday started the academic year. And so I got, this whole bunch of new student workers. And the ones that I had a hard time getting to sort of show up were the ones that had preferred name fields, values in there. But I still have to figure out if that's because of something, in Folio, if it's something in the loader, or if it's something else, which, again, could be one person who's decided they don't want to deal with it, or that we have a piece of code that does not do the job very well. But, the idea, like, we had one student who was a work study student. Their status as a work study student was changed. They were no longer a work study student, but they're still working for the library. So they're working in a non-work study capacity. And they, I'm still waiting for that person to show up as sort of a member of, associated with the library so that I can give them access. This is sort of like I think where this came from. But I'm not. So it's sort of like, to your point about a user record being marked as active and not being overridden by the user load. If we had, in that kind of case, if we had it so that like we could give that person access for 5 days and then see if that cleared up. And then if not, we can, that thing would go away and we could give it to them for another 5 days. Because you're quite correct that that we have people who, that there could be people who will be always there, even after they're gone. And that would not be good practice. So you're right about that. Did we go over sort of like the five things that you thought this would be, or did we just kind of get caught in that one
I think
Eddie?
we just got through this first one. So this first one is just being able to mark fields as protected. Nothing about expiration dates or notes or anything.
Okay.
And so these other ones are adding to that. So we've got adding a reason why a field is protected. I understand the idea here. I worry a little bit about screen space and the amount of complexity that this adds. And the other that I feel kind of similarly about is this expiration date option. I think at a record level, having an expiration date. So if you set protect this record, I think having an expiration date wouldn't be overwhelmingly complex. But I think if we're setting like three or four fields that need to be protected, like you were saying, if they need to not be made inactive, so you want to protect the expiration date and the status, then having to set a date for both of those, I think it starts to become too much. At least from my perspective. I'm open to hearing other people's thoughts on it.
Okay, so that's three.
Yeah, so those are those. And then okay. Yes. Yeah, so this is Brooks is right. The first one was for field level protections. This one is for at the record level protections. So this is blocking the entire user. And then the last one was an ability to track or get a report on which users have fields protected, which if we don't go with an expiration date or if we don't go with an expiration date for field level protections, I think this will be essential, being able to find those records that we changed once and completely forgot about.
And I think that it would be important to me, that's important no matter what fields are protected.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just sort of be able to say, okay, we made these, we marked them as protected. Why did we do that? And is it still relevant?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this sounds like a really big a big thing to discuss. I'm going to propose that we look at this in sort of greater detail next time. and that we and that we can sort of look, because given the changes in security architectures at Chicago, there's a very good chance, given what I've learned so far, that Folio may not be where the problem lies when it comes to users suddenly becoming inactive. And having these user records out of sync with other user records, or with other user records, like the central source of truth on campus, I could see that turning into a big no-no for us. It could be the sort of thing where the original use case for marking someone as inactive, or active when they've been marked inactive, may not be, it may no longer be relevant, and it may be the sort of thing that we don't want to fix in Folio itself, but further upstream. And I will check with my people on that. Although I will mention that I will have to start going to the university's all staff meetings on the third Wednesday of every month. So if there's anybody who's interested in being a co-convener, I would happily, set up the agenda and look at the notes afterwards. I just wouldn't be able to run the meeting. So either that or Amelia, that might fall to you. Would that be okay for you?
Yeah, that would work for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. And
And
I'll write up sort of my input before, and you can choose to take into account or decide that it can be overruled, while I'm away. Go on ahead. I'm sorry.
One other thing that I wanted to mention, actually, it was you were talking about fixing this problem upstream. So at UMass specifically, in the five colleges, we have there's a script that transforms the data that we get from IT into something that the user load will accept. And as part of that, we check for changes to records. Instead of updating every record, we only update records that are different from the previous day. And so this means that we don't run into this problem of records getting repeatedly overwritten. But it is something that the other four colleges do deal with fairly regularly.
And do they wind up having sort of like similar issues that I described with UChicago, or is this just a relic, a remnant of Chicago's previous trauma when it came to user management in a different system?
I think it's pretty similar. It's users where at the end of the semester they're being expired early or not having their accounts enabled on time. And so they have to go in every day and make sure that they reactivate those accounts or fix those expiration dates because they're getting overwritten every day. And yeah, it's usually from a delay in whatever data or a delay in the reality of like someone starting work and whenever HR has everything in the system correctly.
There's always a gap for some reason. Okay. And these are, let me see. So the beginning, the root Jira is UIU530. And then when it comes to adding a reason, is that 531?
So, five.
I'm just making notes, so so we can so I can look at each of these.
Yes, Amalia said before that 530 is the upper one, yeah.
Okay. I'll find the others and link them in. Ooh, it's a UX prod. There we go. Oh yeah.
Sorry about that. My internet just turned off
Oh my
briefly.
goodness.
Ooh.
Surprise.
Yeah, what I was gonna say is UX Prod 242 is the overarching feature ticket. And it looks like there might be one that I didn't go over today. Let's see. 5:30, 31, 33, 32. Okay, so 36.
If I'm not mistaken, that looks like. Oh no. This is new. It looks nice, but.
I'm not sure what this means. The list of overrides to be checked.
As a system library responsible for uploading users, I want to be able to set up a data feed or import in an easy manner and without much customizing due to what user records now are flagged to not be updated by data feed.
Oh, okay. I
Maybe we
think,
should have that fleshed out by Kalila.
yeah, I can ask her about it. I think what this means is that we would want to make, if a field can't be overridden, make it not mandatory in the load file, is I think what this is describing.
Yeah, it seems like there's a very specific and solid idea, but I'm not certain if it's really been written up here. But I mean, if there is a thing where, there's another one here that's about generating a report, right, of people with exception of people with field protections. And, it seems more like that's another approach to the same problem, which is sort of like if you're loading it, then it's more like a if you're loading user data, then it looks like Kalila might be requesting a sort of like a almost real time, as soon as the user load is over, this is why. Or at least these are the ones that happened. But I'm not certain. So maybe we can ask for that to be fleshed out a little bit more.
I'll make a note to talk with Kalila about that, because I'm actually meeting with her later today. So I'll bring that up.
Okay, well, and at that, we are magically coming up to time. So I'm gonna propose that I mean, it seems like we've got a lot to look at for next time. Amelia and I at least have a fair number of action items. So I'll say thanks to everybody for coming and
Yeah, thank you. I'll get the notes up today.
thank you so much, Lola.
Sure.
And we'll see you all next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks,
Bye.
everyone. Bye.